All right, good morning once again, class. I'm still Captain Belloro, and you're still not. So we're going to go over the didactic portion of another component of therapeutic exercise. Now, we gave you the introduction to therapeutic exercise, right? Which comes in many, many forms. And you saw probably the first component that you're now familiar with, range of motion, is a component or a form of exercise. Now, stretching, it's a whole new ball game now. We're going to go over the principles of stretching, okay? Let me see. Did I mention this was a component of the last exam for the last class that a lot of folks had trouble with? Okay. So let's bring you on board for stretching. So we're talk about the didactic or the classroom components, and then at what? 11:20, we get to go up to the lab, take our 10-minute break, and just knock it out, okay? You guys are going to learn some cool things. I don't know if you're sensing it now, but you're really moving into what being a physical therapy technician is about, okay? Everything that you learn is about doing the therapeutic exercise well. This is your big, big take-home skill, and stretching is an important part of it. So there's your terminal learning objectives and your learning steps, and there's more learning steps. All right, flexibility. What's flexibility? It's your ability to move a joint or joints through a full, non-restricted, pain-free range of motion. Okay, if someone's in a lot of pain, but they have full range of motion, are they flexible? Not so much, okay? We want people to be flexible without pain. Flexibility is all about normal, full range, unrestricted, pain-free range of motion. All right? Now, stretch. A stretch is a maneuver designed to elongate soft tissue and increase range of motion. Is that rocket science? No. Now, I think you guys should be tracking, and I don't know, whoever put these lectures together is a genius, but you already have these components of passive and active, okay? Now, what might a passive stretch be? Anybody? And I have a lot of confidence in you because you have the answer right in front of you. I'm sorry?
An assisted stretch.
Okay, yeah. You're going to have an external force to passively stretch a muscle. Whereas an active stretch, the patient uses muscle contractions to actively perform or participate in a stretch. So again, we're down the road of active and passive a little bit. Not so much important in your memorization for stretching, but know that there's an active and a passive component to it. Overstretch, a stretch beyond normal range of motion. Do we want to overstretch? Not so much, no. Because it may cause injury or hypermobility, which then can cause instability. I'm sorry. Did someone have a comment? Sorry. That's cool. So, contracture. Do you think contractures are good?
No.
No, not so much. This is an abnormal shortening of a muscle or other tissue. Now, we can see contractures in ligaments, the capsule. A good example of a capsule is our shoulder capsule. You know, it's got a whole bunch of ligaments that kind of come together and they form a capsule. So we don't want contractures in there. So bad. So muscle contracture is not muscle contraction. All right? This guy is ripped like all get out. So a contracture is not a contraction. When you fire your muscles and they tighten and you're doing a contraction, that is not a contracture, okay? Contraction is shortening of a normal it's a normal function, a contraction. Oftentimes, a contracture is not normal. So, you guys are going to have to understand what types of contractures are, okay? And we're going to go through all four types. All right, now, myostatic contractures, they're non-pathological, all right? It's adaptive shortening. This is consistent with someone having a cast on their foot or ankle, and then you're having on for 6 weeks. And then you take that cast off, and you're walking, and your Achilles tendon is really, really tight, okay? You feel that big, tight band in the back. That is a myostatic, myogenic contracture, all right? It resolves relatively quickly with stretching exercises. So already, we have a really good reason why we would use stretching in the clinic, okay? We get someone that had an Achilles tendon repair, they're going to have a myostatic contracture, and then we're going to help them therapeutically with stretching. So tight muscles or joint capsules secondary to disuse. Not to be confused with a pseudo-myostatic static contracture. This is limited range of motion to muscle hypertonicity, an example, or a muscle spasm. Unfortunately, this isn't a normal process. It's an apparent contracture is due to a constant state of muscle contraction, and it's typically restored with muscle inhibition procedures. Now, it's a sad example, but it's true. When someone has a spinal cord injury, maybe like a C5, C6, and their spinal cord is severed, the muscles below C5, C6, like C5 and C6 go only into like the arms, into the hands, not even full hand function. So all that stuff below, like the legs, the feet, they're there, but they're not really voluntarily controlled. They're still connected to a body, and what you see is a lot of hypertonicity where you get a lot of muscle spasm, and it's really hard to rehab someone like that. Like, I have a spinal cord patient that I'm trying to do transfer techniques where they're going to transition from a wheelchair to, like, maybe a chair. And their legs are going through so much spasm where I can't even get them to straighten, okay? And they're just locked in knee flexion. And it's not something that they're controlling. It's because their whole central nervous system is just completely out of whack from their head injury or their spinal cord. So this pseudo-myostatic contracture is not effective for our rehab. So what we do is we get them on baclofen or Botox or something like that, where we actually get their muscles to decrease through medication. Oftentimes, believe it or not, a surgeon, if they're never going to use their legs again, they'll go in and they'll sever the tendons in around, like they'll cut the hamstrings right off, just so they don't have to have those contractions anymore. So it stinks. But we use muscle inhibition procedures for those pseudo-myostatic contractures. Now, do you think they're normal?
No.
Not so much, no. They're not good. So, periarticular contractures. Arthrogenic contractures. Inarticular pathology. This is what we see in the clinic a lot. All right, periarticular contractures, where you get joint adhesions, joint effusion, osteophyte formations. We get this heterotrophic type bone formation from the joints not being moved or used. You get stiffness in ligaments or joint capsules. This is what we're trying to prevent in the clinic. Periarticular contractures, okay? If you hurt your shoulder, and I use the shoulder as the example because you guys can see it, all right? But if I hurt my shoulder and I immobilize it in a sling and just keep it like this because it feels good for 3 to 4 weeks, the potential for periarticular contractures is very good, all right? That's what they used to do. Now, we take them out of the sling within a few days and start moving them passively, right? Maybe even active assistedly, so we prevent these, all right? So, believe it or not, you can move your arm in a near normal range of motion, but if you never go to that end range, you could get periarticular contractures at that very end range. So you may be very functional, but you may have periarticular contractures that we can combat with stretching, right? So, fibrotic and irreversible muscle contractions. These aren't good. You might get an inflammatory or a denervation or a disease process. The muscle joint structure becomes fibrotic, and muscle attachments become weak and may rupture. You can't force range of motion on these folks. It's unfortunate this happens, but there's sometimes of metabolic diseases and processes that are cause these. So, do you think it would be important to know all the different types of contractures? Yeah, definitely. I dare say yes. All right. So, fibrotic, okay. Here's examples of fibrotic and irreversible muscle contractures. Myositis ossificans, which you learn about in the hip. This is when you get a contusion under a muscle that interfaces with a bone, okay? And you can actually get bone formation underneath that bruise, and it can affect joint play, and if you get it too close to the joint, then it could shut things down. Cerebral palsy, cerebral vascular accident can cause this. Rheumatoid arthritis, which is an example of this ulnar drift that you see here. This person, after this happens, they have a hard time moving their fingers in a normal range, and muscular dystrophy. So fibrotic and irreversible muscle contractures typically involved with a pathological condition. Okay, purposes, why do we stretch people? We're going to have a no-duh factor right here, right? We want to increase their range of motion, all right? return the muscles and connective tissue to normal length, return normal neuromuscular balance between muscle groups. Believe it or not, folks that lack range of motion oftentimes can have neuromuscular balance problems, decrease compression in the joint, and prevent injury or post-exercise soreness. Contraindications to stretching. Just about everything we do has a contraindication. All right. If your joint is limited by bony blocks, all right, if you do have that person that does have the myositis ossificans or a heterotrophic bone formation, like a lot of burn patients, what will happen with them if they're recovering from a burn and it just hurts so much to move, typically we like to splint burn patients in this position to prevent contractures as best we can, but oftentimes above and below where we splinted them, they can get like a hot heterotrophic, like a bony formation. Bone just lays down. And if you try to do a stretch into that, it's like trying to push two blocks together. They don't move. So you really wouldn't want to try to stretch into that. Post-fracture and before complete bone healing. Does that make sense? If we push a fractured bone, what would happen? That's right, it'll break. You guys do not need me. You don't need me. I'm going to be unemployed here. Acute inflammation or infectious process. If you're too aggressive, you're going to continue the inflammation process longer than it needs to be. Disruption of soft tissue healing. If you have a hamstring strain that's a grade 2, you had it yesterday, a lot of folks like to stretch it because it hurts good, it hits the spot. What you're doing is you're impeding scar tissue from healing down. So I always tell my folks, you know, it's okay to do that first step, nice light range of motion, but I don't want you to stretch it until I know you're healed, okay? Sharp acute pain with joint motion or muscle elongation, that's bad. Anytime you feel a sharp acute pain in the rehab setting, BAD, all right? A hematoma or other soft tissue trauma. You get a really, really aggressive thigh bruise, real aggressive thigh bruise, like you take a helmet in an unprotected part of your thigh, and we stretch that real aggressively, it's going to cause the hematoma to open up, or the bruise, and then it's going to have a big interface between the muscle and the bone, and you're going to get myositis ossificans, and that's bone growth. You get extra bone growth. So we don't want to stretch people like that. And if someone's really hypermobile, you know those folks that put their arms behind their backs, I don't know if there's anybody that can put their thumb to their wrist. There's folks that have multi-joint flexibility or instability. Those folks, do you think we need to stretch them a lot? Oftentimes, no. So if there's hypermobility, we don't want to crank on them because some folks can get stretched to the point of dislocation, believe it or not. I've seen that too in the clinic. All right, mechanical response. Here's a bunch of stuff going. I don't want you to worry too much about this. Know that the sarcomere lengthens or this, you know, there's a cross bridge. You guys learned about actin and myosin already. Well, we're pulling those components apart. All right. This looks like a good stretchy stretch picture. Good. When stretch stops, cross bridges return unless long, good stretch. So this does have a good take-home message. We use a component of creep. Creep is where we use a real long, prolonged stretch, oftentimes in the clinic. And I'm talking about someone that has a real big contracture in their elbow from being in a cast. What I'll do in the clinic is I'll put them in a position like this. I'll put a hot pack to the front of their antecubital fossa, and I'll have them hold like a 3-pound weight or a 5-pound weight for like 10, 15 minutes with that hot pack on. And slowly, 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 through creep, they'll get better range of motion. All right. So really, you don't have to do it that aggressively for normal or not so severe folks, but stretching needs to be a long, prolonged process, and I'll tell you why here. Please.
So you're saying you're doing that because they're not actually trying to hold up the weight that's just pushing against the scar tissue?
You're not really, no, you're not trying, you're trying to relax as much as you can, and you're just trying to let the viscoelastic principles of your muscles just really open up, okay? Because there's elasticity to our muscles that we're trying to influence with stretching. Okay. Collagen fibers elongate and straighten under the light loads. Continued loading causes microfailure, which is good. Microfailure is our friend. Okay? That's that creep. The creep isn't that really weird guy that's trying to hit you up at the bar that's not going to pay for any drinks. That's not him. Okay? Creep is a slow, prolonged process that's important for making gains and stretching. Okay? Microfailure. Microfailure is what we do. Okay? We have small microfailures inside muscles, inside ligaments. And microfailure, micro is small, all right? The body can recover from microfailures and adapt to where we want them, all right? Like when we work out and we go to the gym and we hit the weights hard, we're going through microfailure. We're putting small tears in our muscles so our muscles can adapt and grow, all right? When we stretch people, believe it or not, our muscles are getting small little microfailures that are going to adapt and change over time, all right? Microfailure, good. So like the next test, it's okay to get a microfailure, okay? That would be a couple, but you don't want a macrofailure, okay? So microfailure is good. All right, so we got muscle spindles. Muscle spindles, when it comes to stretching, are not our friends, okay? Muscle spindles, they're great for muscle contractions. They're great for strengthening and response. But when it comes to stretching, muscle spindles are the enemy, okay? They monitor length changes and velocity of changes in muscle. So when something happens very quickly, very abruptly, the muscle spindle kicks in. It's a fast or a brief stretch. That's why we don't like people to do real ballistic stretching. Okay, it does have a time and a place, but if you do it real fast, the muscle spindles will kick in, and then we can't get a stretch. Because what happens, these muscle spindles, and I don't want to break it down too much. Did Ms. McGlinchey teach you about muscle spindles? They're wrapped around the muscle. They're nerve endings, for a sense. And then when they get fired up, they call on the muscle to contract. Do you want a muscle contracting when you're trying to stretch it? Not so much, no. So it's a protective mechanism, but it's counterproductive. Now, are muscle spindles our friends when we stretch? No, not so much. All right. Whereas the Golgi tendon organs, they are our friends, okay? We can get the Golgi tendon organs to, believe it or not, override the muscle spindles. They monitor muscle tension from a stretch or a contraction. With slow, sustained stretch, typically greater than 6 seconds, impulses from the GTO, Golgi tendon organ, will override the muscle spindle. This is the take-home message. That's why we do it slow and pronounced in the clinic. That's why Sergeant Airborne has you doing it slow. And you know, Sergeant Airborne used to make us bounce all over the place and kick in the muscle spindles, and that's not good. We want Sergeant Airborne to do it nice and slow, right? Nice and slow, greater than 6 seconds, let those GTOs kick in. When the GTOs override the muscle spindles, we get this thing called autogenic inhibition. And it's wicked, and you're going to see it upstairs on the third deck, all right? You're going to see autogenic inhibition in its full glory, and then it's too early to talk about the weekend, but when you're trying to impress folks, you can tell them all about autogenic inhibition, and they're going to be like, they're going to think you guys are doctors, you know what I mean? You're just going to be amazingly well-equipped for this. So, autogenic inhibition is beneficial to stretching, all right? The Golgi tendon organs, they're overriding the muscle spindles, and now we're getting the muscle to relax. The reflex inhibition, relaxation, or shutting off of maximum of the muscle following a slow stretch or maximal contraction from within the same muscle. Increased tension from slow stretch stimulates the GTOs within the muscle. This inhibits and relaxes the muscle being stretched. Increased tension from contracting the muscle to be stretched stimulates the GTOs. Upon release, this inhibits the muscle being stretched. Okay, they sound kind of like almost counterproductive or counteractive. So we use this technique, contract, relax, okay? So, Golgi tendon organs respond both to contraction and stretching, all right? So, if you just let me take your leg and try to push your heel over your head, if I do that slow and pronounced, eventually the Golgi tendon organs will kick in and override the muscle spindles, okay? But if I have you do that, and then I'm going to hold your heel, I'm going to have you push your heel back into my hand for a little bit, then I'm going to get the hamstring to contract, and that's also going to fire up the Golgi tendon organs, all right? And then I'm going to ask you to relax, and then we're going to get autogenic inhibition again. I'm going to bring a volunteer up here, and I'll show you real quick, okay? Can I borrow your leg here? So you can just lay flat with your head here, your foot down here. Sure, on your back. And we're going to do this up in the lab, but I want to give you a little taste, right? So just keep your knees straight. So we go as far as you can. You tell me when to stop. Okay, so his muscles are firing. You can see a little shaky shake going here. If I do it longer than 6 seconds, slow, pronounced, right, smooth, his muscle spindles are shutting off and his Golgi tendon organs are kicking in. Now check this out. Can you go ahead and push into my hand real light for about 5 seconds? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and relax. And then I get to advance him a little bit. Okay? And then I can hold it there. What happened when he contracted back into my hand, again, the Golgi tendon organs kicked in. I asked him to relax the muscles, and the muscle spindles are like, what the heck just happened? We just faked out the muscle spindles, okay? They're not our friend. We're going to keep them guessing. Go ahead and push back into my hand. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and relax. We can advance them a little bit more. Okay? Real slow and pronounced. Does that look like rocket science? We're not going to make this hard, sports fans, okay? We're trying to shut down the muscle spindles. They are not our friend. Thank you. Okay? Golgi tendon organs, yes. So we can get them to relax with a prolonged, easy stretch greater than 6 seconds. Or we can get them to relax with kind of a contraction and relax. Okay? So, real easy. That's all these two bullet slides mean. All right? It should be very well pronounced in your student handout. All right? And you need to know that. Okay? Reciprocal inhibition, I do not want you guys getting too wrapped up on. Okay? Because I don't apply it that much in the clinic, and if I don't think it's important, we can just flush it down the toilet. No, I'm not kidding. Now, you do have to put it in concept. You have to put it in context, because you don't want to confuse these two, right? When the test comes, this might be an answer versus another answer, and you don't want to confuse them. So don't not study it. Now, this is important. I highlight stuff for you guys to understand, so you can put your emphasis in those terms, but if you do not read the material and understand the concept, the context, you see terms on the test and you won't understand them. So you have to read all the material, right? Are we tracking with that? So the inhibition, relaxation, or shutting off of one muscle following the contraction of the opposite muscle. Okay, now, reciprocal inhibition. If I'm trying to get my biceps to stretch, okay? I want to stretch my biceps, okay? And I want to elongate them. If my triceps are firing, all right, it's an opposite muscle, that could be counterproductive of that stretch, all right? So we got to get both groups to relax, all right, and do their thing and cooperate, all right? So oftentimes you have to get opposite muscle groups to either contract or relax or shut off so you can accomplish what you're trying to do, all right? Now you can have a pathological application, but there's a stretching application. Contracting the agonist can cause reflex relaxation. I don't like getting wrapped up in this reflex relaxation, reflex inhibition. I want you to understand autogenic inhibition, all right? And it's not just for the test. It's because you're going to use this a lot more practically in the class. All right, now, we will give you an example of reciprocal inhibition because we're going to do it in the lab. Can I have your leg again? What's your name?
Garrett.
Mr. Garrett. Is that your first or your last name?
Last name.
Okay, cool. Didn't want to act like we were right off the block, you know? All right, Mr. Garrett, can you go ahead and lay back just like you were before? Don't leave me hanging, though.
No.
Okay. Okay. So go ahead and lay back. So we're going to do the same thing, okay? We're going to do exactly the same thing. Can you guys all see in the back? Okay. So we're going to stretch him. We're going to use autogenic inhibition to confuse his muscles, his muscle spindles. Okay, now go ahead and push back into my hand real light. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and relax. That's kind of contract, relax. All right? Now what I'm going to ask him to do, and don't get confused here, sports fans, all right? But what I'm going to ask you to do is after you're done pushing into my hand, when you relax, I want you to pull your toe up towards your head, okay? Now, before he does that, when he pushes into my hand, he's using his hamstrings, okay? We are stretching his hamstrings. We are using autogenic inhibition to fire up those GTOs to override the muscle spindles. Rocket science? No. What I'm going to call on him to do is use his hip flexors or his quadriceps to pull his foot up towards his head. Okay? That is reciprocal inhibition. All right? Are we going to get hung up on the term reciprocal inhibition? N-O. Okay? But there's still practicality because we're going to teach you how to stretch this way. I'm going to call it contract, relax, contract in the clinic. Okay? That's for life. We just did contract, relax. He contracted and relaxed. Now he's going to contract, relax, contract. Okay? Go ahead and push into my hand. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Relax and pull up towards your head now. Okay? All right? And we're going to do that one more time. Now, I'm going to have you push real light with about 10% of your strength into my hand. So you're going to push towards me. You have to do a lot of cueing here, right? So I'm going to say, push back into my hand here. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Relax. Now pull this way. Pull this way. And he would use his hip flexors to pull. That's what contract relax is. It's effective, all right? But not that much more effective than contract relax, okay? So are we going to get hung up on this reciprocal inhibition? Not too much. Let's call it contract relax contract. Rocket science? No. You guys are... I can't tell them what they are. It's too early. And plus, I'm being taped, so I got to be good. Okay, ballistic stretching. There are all different types of stretching, and believe it or not, they all have a place. Static stretching. Do we like static stretching? Yes, that's what we were doing, all right? There's ballistic stretching. That's really high-speed, kind of quick, jerky motions. Believe it or not, it does have a place for some folks. It's very common in baseball that they do that. Dynamic stretching. Dynamic stretching... Let me see if we give exact... Yeah, we do. Dynamic stretching is like when I'm taking care of the Army rugby team, and for their drills, before a game, I have them run some drills at half speed and three-quarter speed. They're doing full body motions. They're doing their passes. They're doing tackling drills real light and easy. To me, that's a dynamic stretch. Okay, their body's moving, and their ligaments, their tendons, they're all getting warmed up. Now, this proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. This is what we were just doing with Mr. Garrett. Okay? Hold, relax, contract, relax, variation. I don't want you to get too wrapped up in these terms too much. We're going to go through them. Hold, relax, contract, relax, variation. So, static stretch, it's meant to be slow, controlled stretch applied at the end range. It's got a long duration, a low load, and it's repeated. It's best if the muscle is heated. Oftentimes what we have people do to heat muscles, we don't throw hot packs on them. We get them to do nice light motion. You get much more blood flow. Blood is warm, right? You get much more blood flow to muscles with light activity than you ever will with a hot pack, okay? But if there are some superficial tissues, maybe some tendons, ligaments that need to be stretched as well, oftentimes we put a hot pack on. The only time I put a hot pack on is if they're really complaining of a lot of stiffness, okay? But the slow stretch activates the GTO. Is the GTO our friend or our foe? Yes. Okay, research advocates for decreasing muscle soreness. So, yeah, stretching's good to decrease muscle soreness. So passive stretching, static stretch. Stretch is passively applied by provider, partner, body weight, or positioning. All right, we do a lot of passive stretching. The steady stretch activates the Golgi tendon organs. Okay, passive static stretching will activate the Golgi tendon organs because they're our friend and we want them to play. Okay, and they're really important to override the muscle spindles because they will knock in autogenic inhibition in a big way. Okay, active stretching. Stretch is actively applied by contracting an agonist muscle to maintain a stretch on the antagonist muscle. Okay, this is what we did with Mr. Garrett when we did the contract, relax, contract, okay? So, that also activates the Golgi tendon organ, and it really fakes out the muscle spindle, all right? Because, once again, we want the GTO to play. So, know that passive stretching can activate the Golgi tendon organ, and guess what? So can active static stretching, okay? So, static stretching... Everything that we did right there, although Mr. Garrett was moving, it's still a static stretch as opposed to a ballistic stretch. A ballistic stretch could be something like I'm kicking up real quick. I'm trying to stretch my piriformis muscle that's deep to my gluteus maximus. That's a ballistic stretch, okay? A dynamic stretch could be me jogging half speed, okay? Don't confuse active static stretching for dynamic or ballistic stretching, okay? Everything that we just did on the table that has a prolonged, elongated stretch, it's static stretching. All right, we like static stretching because there's a lot less danger of overstretching. Wouldn't that be good? Okay, we don't want to overstretch patients because we can hurt them. It activates the GTO and depresses the muscle spindle. Have I nailed that point home? Requires less energy, decreases local muscle tightness, and provides prevention of muscle soreness. So, take-home message, static stretching is a much more safer and less danger of overstretching. Disadvantage, it doesn't stimulate real life. Improper technique is common. And these are typically the three things that we see. Not holding the stretch long enough, wrong position, and substitution. How many times have you seen this on the PT field, where someone's doing the stretch wrong? You know, oftentimes either yourself or your battle buddies or, you know, your shipmates, they're out there, they're not doing the right stretch, and you can kind of tell. They don't care. They just want to get done. But poor technique is poor effectiveness. You're not really going to get done what you need to do in the clinic if our patients aren't doing the stretches right. That's where you guys come in. All right? So, it's important for you guys to know these principles, and this is what trips you up on the exam. All right? This is what's going to trip you up on the exam. We need a long duration, 20 to 30 seconds. We want to repeat them 3 to 4 times, and we have people do this 3 to 5 times a day. Now, let's go to the experts. Have you guys used Mrs. McDonald, Ms. McDonald, and Mr. Zimmer to your advantage yet, as far as their previous? Now, the only reason they got to stay here, and we don't like to use the term to excel again, is because they're stellar. You know, they're stellar, and we wanted them to go on and be great technicians, right? That's the only reason we retain people. We don't really recycle folks very often. So you guys need to use these folks as resources. They're humongous resources. They're staying because they were really good, but maybe one or two things. You had micro failures, right? So use them, and they will tell you the number one thing on practical exams is people don't know these principles, how long to stretch and how long to hold it for, the fit principles. And it's really hard to get this all right when you're like halfway through in a written exam, you have form fatigue, your brain is everywhere, and you can't remember any of it. Okay, so nail these things early and study them often, all right? Because this is your bread and butter, and we expect you guys to know this very well, and we fail people on the practical exams and the written exams because of these principles. And then, like, you come in, like, 2 weeks from now, and this whole section's not there. No, I'm looking. So you want to hold it for at least 20 to 30 seconds. You repeat it 3 to 4 times. You're not going to see change in flexibility unless you're doing it at least 3 to 5 times a day. All right, ballistic stretching. Muscle contractions or body movements applied at quick stretches at end range. We don't talk a lot about it because it increases the propensity for injury. It is not unsafe for a very healthy person to do if they do it right. But it increases the likelihood of hurting an injured person. All right. Bouncing type stretches, high-level athletes, sport-specific, and often used after a static stretch. This is what doesn't happen. What happens in baseball, these high-end guys are like awesome athletes. Their strength coach had already put them through a static stretch, and then they're going to the ballistic stretching. What happens with Sergeant Airborne is we didn't get that static stretch. Then he makes us do the ballistic stretch, and then I got, you know, Private Snuffy in the clinic with a low back strain. So there is a place for it, but it's not something we do very frequently in the clinic because it increases the chance of getting injured. So it does have some good real-life principles because you can mimic activities and sports and life, and it's effective if done right. Disadvantages, it activates the stretch reflex. All right, believe it or not, the muscle spindles kick in. Danger of tearing a muscle requires more energy, and in my professional experience, very rarely do I see it done right. Dynamic stretching is okay. It's our friend. It's sports specific. It's similar to ballistic stretching, but it avoids that end range bouncing. Doesn't that just sound bad, that end range bouncing? Used as a sport-specific warm-up to improve flexibility and prepare for activity. That's like the golfer or the home run king swinging the bat in the club nice and easy within their painful range. Warming up, dynamic stretch, okay? And as they swing, they just take it a little bit further and further. Really effective and very safe if you do it right. Look, walking long strides. Maybe someone stepping out and doing a really long lunge. Military conditioning drills. See? They know what they're doing. Calisthenics. PNF stretches. That's what we were doing with Mr. Garrett. Initially designed as a rehab program to relax the muscle spindle and increase tone. Expanded use to improve muscle flexibility. You need a practitioner or a partner to assist you. You involve both the active and passive movements. And it may be superior to other stretches because it facilitates the muscular inhibition. This is where the trainers and the physical therapists get paid the big bucks. Ever see, you know, right before the game, you know, Joe Hollywood, third baseman's out there getting stretched. A lot of times the trainer's out there doing the PNF techniques with him just to really warm him up. Works really well, but it takes a lot of time and you need a partner. Technique, passive stretch to mild discomfort for 10 seconds. This is the whole relaxed technique. Practitioner applies a force in the direction of the stretch. Force is resisted by patient. Patient relaxes. So, this is the one I want you guys to be concerned about, okay? Obviously, because it's not bolded, the didactic component may not be severely emphasized. But this is what we're really going to do in the clinic. This is what I want you guys to understand, the contract relax. So think of me taking Mr. Garrett's leg back. I held it for 10 seconds. He contracts his muscle, the target muscle that I'm trying to stretch. He contracts his hamstring by kicking his heel into my hand. I let him do that for a short period of time. Then I get him to relax, and then I take up the barrier. Okay? That's contract, relax. All right. Now, I'm not going to harp on contract, relax techniques, because this is the one that I want you to understand well. All right. You can understand that it's getting the GTOs to fire. It's causing the autogenic inhibition, and the muscle spindles are relaxing. All right. I'm not going to tell you too much about this, other than that was the second technique that me and Mr. Garrett did. That's when he contracts his hamstrings, he relaxes, and then he still wants to stretch his hamstrings, so he's using the opposite muscle to pull back towards his head, and because he's powering up with his quadriceps and his hip flexors, that's ultimately stretching the hamstrings, okay? You guys will know it very readily when you start doing it to each other in the clinic, okay? It'll have better clinical application up there. And again, it's another way of using autogenic inhibition. And you get reciprocal inhibition. The reason I don't harp on it, because I do not want you guys confusing autogenic inhibition with reflex inhibition or reciprocal inhibition. All right, so tips with stretching. Do we want to overpower our patient? No. Do we want our patient to overpower us? Isometric hold relax contractions most common. So the first technique that we did when we just go and we push him to his limit, okay, and we just hold it there, that is hold relax, okay? You hold it and you relax and I'm going to hold it there for you. That's the most common. That's the one you guys already know, right? That's the one you do actively and passively yourself. We're going to bring you into a new realm of party tricks when we do the contract relax, all right? Good patient and practitioner body positioning is vital. If I'm trying to stretch, how much do you weigh, Mr. Garrett? Wait, about 215. How much do you weigh?
232.
Okay. And I'm 145 pounds soaking wet. Now, if I'm trying to stretch a bunch of Mr. Garrett's by the rugby team, if I'm not using good, proper positioning, I'm going to be toast. Okay? And good verbal cueing is vital. Remember where my hands were on his leg? Like, I can use touch and verbal cueing on where his body goes. I can tap the front part of his leg to go that way, tap the back part. So our hands and our voices are going to work. Okay, Cyriac's rules. Pain prior to resistance, don't stretch. These are take-home, okay? These are testable points. Pain prior to resistance, don't stretch. Okay, so let's put this in concept. Okay, so I would expect to see some resistance of my shoulder flexion at 180 degrees. If it's here, don't stretch it, okay? If I'm having a lot of pain before 180, we don't need stretching. We need maybe passive range of motion or active assisted range of motion, all right? If I get pain at the point of resistance, okay, where I should be, okay, maybe a little pain at the point of resistance where it should be, it's okay to give it a general stretch. Gentle, okay? Resistance prior to pain, all right? Now, resistance prior to pain, what does that mean? That's normal, folks. That is normal, okay? Like when I pushed Mr. Garrett's leg up and I got some resistance, it's not really painful. There's some discomfort with the stretch. No duh, right? It's okay. It's okay. If there's resistance prior to pain, that normal stretch. But if I keep on going, he's eventually going to feel pain. All right? Do we want to stretch into pain? No. Now, pain at the point of resistance where you should expect it. It depends on how flexible you are. But if I feel some resistance here, but it's not pain, all right? Like the example that I showed you, and we're going to learn this in the clinic real well. If I bring you up here, it doesn't hurt, but there's resistance. Is it okay for me to stretch you? Sure. And then we take them to where they're supposed to be. All right? So, just remember these components. Pain prior to the resistance, you do not want to stretch. Pain at the point of resistance, you do it gentle. Resistance prior to pain is why we're stretching them. All right? That's what's normal. So, okay. So here's the FIT principles. We gave you the FIT principles for range of motion. We're going to give you the FIT principles for stretching. So, for frequency, we want to do it 3 to 5 times a day. Those PNF techniques that we did with Mr. Garrett, it's a little more intensive. It's going to beat up your muscles. You're going to get more than micro failures there. We don't want to do that every day. We do that about 2 to 3 times a week. So if we had the capacity, I'd probably have Mr. Garrett do it himself a couple days a week and me do it a couple days a week to round out a full 3 to 5 times fully. But when you're doing it just static, it's 3 to 5 times. If you're doing it PNF, it's 2 to 3 times. So fibroblastic phase. Stretching is more of a fibroblastic subacute type thing. Gentle stretches into the pain resistance. If we're doing it remodeling, we can get progressive stretches into a resistance as tolerated. All right? You don't see a lot of stretching in that real acute early inflammatory phase. All right? Static, the time, we want a low load for long duration up to about 30 seconds. The PNF techniques, I would ask Mr. Garrett to push back in my hand for about 6 seconds, followed by a 10 to 30 second stretch. The techniques don't really change that much other than having him contract his muscles a little bit. And I do about 1 set for about 3 to 4 repetitions. Static stretching for type, easily applied as self-stretches to increase flexibility. The PNF stretches applied with a technician and facilitates that muscular inhibition. There's Calvin and Hobbes, sports fans. You know the end is near.